This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Denise and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And good afternoon and welcome to Wednesday.
Wednesday's with me.
Denise.
I'm here.
Nice. Well, welcome to Newsmakers, everybody. And boy, we have an action-packed show today.
We have some great guests today.
A couple of heavy hitters today.
Heavy hitters. Let's start right out of the gate. I'm going to introduce the lovely woman to my right here, the Honorable Senator Kim Thatcher, SD13. And on the phone, we have Senate Minority Leader from SD2, Herman Bartschiger.
Yes.
Welcome to the show, Herman and Kim. It's good to have you here.
Good to be here.
Great to be here.
So I was putting together some questions that I wanted to ask you today, and the first thing that came into my head was the legislative session of 2019 that will go down in infamy. I think right out the gate, I just want to start off by asking both of you, can you give our listeners sort of a nutshell impression, maybe one or two words, I know that's probably hard, of what that session meant to you? Kim, I'll start with you.
You know, I've been in the legislature since 2005, and I have to say this is the most divisive session I have ever been a part of.
Yeah. Senator Bartschiger, how about you?
I would say it was very challenging.
That's a nice way to put it.
Challenging. Okay, I'll take that.
So there's highs and lows. I know being in the super minority is never a good place to be. This was an unprecedented session. Senator Bartschiger, can you talk about, without, I don't want to spend, you know, too much time being really, really negative on things, were there some highlights to this session for you?
Some highlights?
Yeah.
Boy, that's a curveball, you know? I would have to take some time and think about the highlights.
Okay. Well, we could start with the lowlights then. It sounds like there may be a few more of those.
Yeah. You know, you got to remember, right out of the gate, they ran the statewide rent control.
Yeah.
And that was a sign that this was going to be a difficult session, because that was at the very beginning of the session. They ran it through both chambers and never took any amendments or any consideration of what Republicans, they just ran it through, and that was that. And boy, that was a sign that they were taking advantage of being in a supermajority.
Yeah, pretty much right out of the gate, you kind of knew what the ground rules were going to be.
Yeah, it was pretty much, you know, you guys go sit in the corner and we got work to do. So
wow.
So Kim, what did that feel like? I mean, we were all kind of on the outside looking in, we saw what was going on, but what did it feel like to be in the building being treated that way?
I can't say it was all negative all the time. Uh-huh. There were times, or definitely individuals, yeah, I work with,
yeah,
and you know, we get along, but aside from that, the whole session as, yeah, a whole, as a collective, if you will, was pretty oppressive. I think
it's good that you mentioned that, you know, your colleagues, it is a workplace. So you do have colleagues. I think in every workplace we have coworkers that we get along with and some that we don't. And a lot of times you have to go and you have to sort of make nice and you have to put some things aside. Did you find that was more challenging this session with people that normally you would have a good relationship? Or were you guys able to kind of get past that a little bit? Or was it that contentious?
It depended on the individual. There were some individuals that were holding, your positions against you,
yeah,
you know, like, you, if you're not with me, you're against me and you're my enemy. That was kind of the attitude by some.
I don't know, Senator Bartschiger, how we get things done for the people of Oregon when you're kind of dealing with that kind of an atmosphere.
Well, you know, when I first came into the Senate 7 years ago, you know, it was pretty much you had to work together and come up with a bill that both Democrats and Republicans supported, because the Senate president would always say, if it doesn't have a Republican vote, then it's not coming to the floor.
Uh-huh.
So by doing that, it forced Republicans and Democrats to work together in a compromise and to come up with something, or it never went to the floor. That all went out the window. It didn't matter anymore. It didn't matter. If we were highly against it or not, it came to the floor and it passed. So that was a big, big change from prior years.
So how has your relationship with your constituents changed after the drama and things that had happened this year? Kim, I'll start with you, because there was a lot more citizen engagement, a lot more civic engagement. People that had never paid attention to politics in this state all of a sudden became woke, to use the left's vernacular. You know, are you seeing the level of engagement go up between you and constituents?
That was the good thing I saw about this session.
Yeah.
You said it. There were people engaged that were not paying attention before. And I was so optimistic seeing not just to show up one day for a rally type of situation or for a hearing. It was constant. Not the same group of people, but the same people coming in, filtering in, wanting to make sure that their voice was heard. And they're going around and visiting each legislator and visiting their offices and trying to be nice and being kind of chased down and called names at times, which was unfortunate. But seeing that engagement and seeing so many people fight for what they believed in was very heartening to me.
I would say it's very heartening to see that, because one of the things, you know, we talk about, you know, the relationship really starts once you cast that vote for somebody, because it is a relationship. It's a constituent relationship. As my representative, I need to hold my representative accountable and have a dialogue. You guys don't know what you don't know. So we need to inform you of what our priorities are and what it is that's important to us.
Yeah, I do appreciate people coming in with maybe, I would maybe put them in the category of being on the opposite side of the aisle as me when they come in, but I can see their point and I can understand what they're where they're coming from, and I do appreciate hearing from diverse groups of people on you know, various legislation and why they think it's important or important to kill or important to pass.
Yeah, I think as we get further in the conversation, we're going to talk about what we're looking forward to. Senator Bartschiger, did you have a similar experience with constituents from your district?
Oh, my district, you know, it's interesting. We're a 3-hour drive from Salem.
Yeah.
And I was amazed how many people made the trek up there for the big rally, that Timber Unity rally.
Yes.
You know, they took, and the difference is, you know, all those people have jobs, so they lost money that day. They didn't go to work. They made that trek up there, and the support in my district's been overwhelming.
Yeah, and you talk about that travel. I mean, we all know Oregon is a huge state. And so for people to, number one, make the time sacrifice, the money sacrifice, and then to be up and to be regularly engaged, aside from when they were here physically in Salem, are you still seeing that level of engagement via emails, phone calls, reaching out to you in sort of preparation for what we probably will most likely expect something similar in the 2020 short session?
Oh, yeah. They're already planning rallies for February, I think the whole week. The whole first week will be different rallies, mining community, agriculture community, timber community, and others. People are very, very, very engaged. I think by us leaving and denying a quorum because we felt so strongly and our constituents felt so strongly about that bill and to oppose it, I think people felt like finally there's somebody that is really, really good representing us. And they've just come out and grown. You know, I was amazed. I met with the Timber Unity folks this last week, and I didn't realize there was people came from British Columbia, Washington, Idaho, as well as Oregon to support that. That's incredible as far as I'm concerned. That's just, in this day and age, that's incredible.
I'm glad you brought up the denying quorum, the Oregon 11. We're going to take a quick break here, but I want to touch on that coming back, because I want to talk to you about how that was for you being the, you know, two members of the Oregon 11 and what that felt like to you. But we're going to take a quick break right now. You are listening to Senators Bartschiger and Kim Thatcher on KYKN 1430 Newsmakers Wednesdays with Denise. Salem is listening. We'll be right back.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem.
We are back with Senators Kim Thatcher and Herman Bartschiger. And before we left for our quick break, we were talking about, hashtag Oregon 11, Senate Republicans walking out, denying quorum. Obviously, you both know you made international news on this. I mean, Oregon was making headlines all over the place. I wanted to kind of take it a little bit personal with you, with both of you, and find out a little bit about what that was like for you personally, for your families, to do this, because it was potentially politically risky. The pressures being applied to you, 11, were immense. Again, being on the outside looking in, I don't think I could even begin to imagine what that felt like. So, Kim, I'm going to start with you. Can I fill us in a little bit? I mean, I know it's hard, but what was that time like for you?
I felt busier than I have ever felt before. I was working and busy and constantly on the phone or, typing up this or that or responding to this or that and all these, emails and Facebook posts coming in.
Yeah.
So I felt really, really busy. But other than that, I mean, I started out in Washington. And then when it came public that Governor Jay Inslee was saying that, Oregon Republican senators are not welcome here, I really took that seriously.
Yeah.
And I felt like he would try to do everything he could to try to help his pal to the south, Governor Kate Brown. So I figured, I better get out of here.
Skedaddle.
So I skedaddled in a very law-abiding and very carefully driven path to another state. And I didn't even buy gas until I got to this other state, and I was on fumes. And I thought, well, I don't even want to use my credit card. They were tracking our phones. I mean, there was all kinds of things going on. The police had been to my house, and it was just sort of uncharted territory. We didn't know what to expect or what even could happen, as far as the Oregon State Police being pulled into apprehending us or whatever. It was interesting. You felt like you're like, gee.
It was high drama.
Yeah, high drama. Turning off your phone and seeing, is it online? You just don't know these things. This is training you don't get, right? It was kind of fun.
So, Senator Bartschiger, one of the things I kept hearing as well is they need to come back and do their jobs. Do your jobs. And as a constituent, my representative, my senator, was Jackie Winters, Republican. But from my perspective as a constituent, as a Republican, I felt you were doing your jobs. Can you speak a little bit again about what your experience was and how do you answer that accusation?
Well, one, we were doing a job. Our constituents kept telling us they didn't like cap and trade.
Yeah.
And then after we have, almost 3,000 people show up at the Capitol, that was an eye-opener. We had to do something, and that was the only tool in the toolbox, was the deny a quorum. Now, as far as not doing our job, what they forgot is we came back after that was all. We've killed the bill, successfully killed the bill. We came back and we worked like 14 hours on that Saturday to pass legislation. It was just mundane legislation, but it needed to be done, to keep the different agencies open, budget bills, that sort. We passed over 100 bills in one day that needed to be done. And then that Sunday we finished up the rest. So we did our job. So all those people that said we didn't do our job, they're misinformed.
Well, I know there was a lot of pushback, again, from constituents, from grassroots GOP coming back and saying, absolutely, they are doing their job. And in fact, they wouldn't be doing their job if they stayed and voted on garbage bills, because that's not doing what someone as a voter, brought them in there to do. Quick question, too. You talked about, the big rally. I remember that day I worked downtown. The trucks, the sort of the spectacle of it all. Did that make an impression in the building?
Well, we weren't there. We were still on our sabbatical. So we weren't there to observe it. But the pictures I seen, I can't. It had to make a difference. Nothing's ever been done like that.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And the planning in such a short period of time. My constituents from Grants Pass, they said that was so organized. They drove up there. They went to the fairgrounds. They got on a bus that took them into the Capitol. They were at the rally all day, got on a bus, went back to the fairgrounds, got in their cars, and came home. They said there was hassle-free. It was just, You're very well organized. So kudos to that group for pulling that off in such a short period of time.
I was down there, and I did a report from there to Newsmakers Show that day, and it was quite the spectacle of just blocks and blocks and blocks of different trucks from different areas of the state just circling around, just showing their support and saying, you know what, we're here, we care, do something about it.
And I'm glad it happened. And I think, Kim, that has to play into your metrics on some decision making when you see that groundswell, that huge amount of support coming out. It bothered me, though, that these individuals that we have to come to the Capitol and beg for our jobs.
I know.
How did we get here?
I go back to the redistricting that was done under Bradbury, and mm-hmm. he kind of changed all the districts all over the state. Mm-hmm. And I think there was an element of gerrymandering. Yeah. And I think mm-hmm. that has given the Democrats a huge advantage. And I think we're paying that price
yeah.
now.
That's literally the old elections have consequences. And then, you know, who you put in those seats. And then when you look back over your shoulder and you can point back to a point in time when this really started to happen. I mean, I don't think super majorities are not good regardless of party.
Right, right. Supermajorities are not a good thing, as well as having so much representation from one part of the state. Portland has, I haven't counted up recently how many senators and, you know, basically legislators from the Portland area and more liberal areas of the state are representing, you know, that they get such a strong representation, it kind of overshadows the rest of the state.
And you talk about talk about diversity. Our state is so diverse, ideologically diverse, geographically diverse, plus it's huge. Mm-hmm. So, Senator Bartschiger, how, you know, looking forward, I think that urban-rural divide, I don't think it's a myth necessarily. Do you see that gap, that chasm widening?
Yeah, I think it'll continue to widen. And it's unfortunate when you don't have balance in the legislature, this is what happens. I mean, if you think about, you know, I just don't understand, you know, I know they have the supermajority, but what they did, I mean, if you look at all the things they did, they passed the statewide rent control, they stole part of the kicker,
yeah.
they passed a gross receipts tax that just a couple years ago, the voters of Oregon
yeah.
said no. And they just said, well, we're going to pass it anyways. And that's about a 4% increase to everybody's goods and services for everybody's household. Then they also, what they did in that bill is they hid this little part in there that not very many people picked up. But what it did, it also limits the ability for the taxpayer, the citizens, to refer the gross receipts tax. So they were clever in doing that. And then how about the driver's cards?
Yes, yeah.
I mean, the citizens, you know, they overturned the last driver card bill, but they ran it anyways and passed it. They increased almost all the state fees. And then they come with this, you know, House Bill 2020 cap and trade, and they, you know, they try to scare everybody and say the end of the world's coming on. And, you know, if you really look at the facts, Oregon, our emissions is almost the lowest per capita than anybody else in the world. And, you know, really the purpose of 2020 was to raise the cost of fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know. You know, scientists that testified even said that if we pass 2020, we're only 3% of about 3.7% of the population in the United States, let alone the world, that it would be unmeasurable,
mm-hmm.
unmeasurable. But yet we're going to increase anybody that uses energy, we're going to increase all of that, whether it's at the pump, whether it's where you heat your house, or any other use of energy. And I'll tell you what, low-income Oregonians, they were going to get hit the hardest.
Yes. Yes, and I think the word that has popped up for me throughout this session is arrogance. It's just the arrogant way this has been handled. What I hear when I'm out talking to voters, to GOP voters, to my neighbors, to coworkers, is the sheer level of, you know, we feel like this is being rammed down our throats, that we're not being listened to, that the arrogance, that this was all baked in the cake, certainly at the last election. Any sense that 2020 election may sway things now that people are hashtag woke?
Well, we can all hope so, and we're all trying. I would like to see some balance being brought back to Oregon politics, because right now there's no balance, and this is what is infuriating people, you know? I mean, when you don't even have a say, it's like you're not even there, and I think that's what's really infuriating people, and it rightly should. You know, we've got to have balance. And right now we don't.
Yeah. And I think, Kim, like you were talking about, you had lots of people that were that have been activated, that have been mobilized, that are making themselves known, making their voices heard. Are you seeing that as we kind of are in the, a little bit of the lull before the 2020 short session storm? Are you still seeing, is it, you
know, oh, I see engagement.
Still engagement?
Oh, yes.
Maybe
absolutely.
Not at that high level, but.
Yeah, you don't see it because we're not at the Capitol. We're not in one place, but they're definitely. There is definitely engagement right now. We have to get that balance. Right now, balance to me is the Oregon way. Right now, we've got East Coast-style politics infecting our state, and that's not what we want.
Having grown up on the East Coast, I don't want that here.
Yeah.
Not at all. I don't need somebody trying to break my knuckles to get me to go along with them. Not at
right?
all. Right? Right? No, that's not the way we do things. I think everyone talks about, was it the 2013 session? That was the 50-50?
Whichever one.
Whichever one. I think it was 20, that one everyone sort of wistfully thinks back to that.
Yeah,
remember
that
when?
That was my favorite one.
Pepperidge Farm remembers. That was good times. But then you had a balance and you did have to do, you had to work together. You had to come to the table. Mm-hmm. You had to compromise. It's not sort of this, what we're seeing, this arrogance of, we have all the power. And like Senator Bart Sugar said too, you know, it was kind of signaled with the rent control bill. There's no place at the table for you. And that's not a good way to operate.
No, that's not what they're there for.
So we're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, I want to kind of get into, what do you both see coming for 2020? What do you hope the level of engagement, maybe some crystal ball reading and what you might think. But we are going to take a quick break. Right now you are listening to Wednesdays with Denise on Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Now back to Len Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions in the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Sylvan Learning Center.
And we are back and we are talking to Senators Herman Bartschiger and Kim Thatcher. Senator Bartschiger, I want to toss back to you because we're over 2019. We have some time between, you know, has passed between that has all ended and sort of the drama and everything that happened then. As we look forward to the short session in 2020, now we've already talked about, you know, we've delayed or stopped some of these ghastly, awful bills, but they're going to be back. Am I right?
Well, you know, I had a conversation last week with the Senate president, and I took the liberty to remind him that he is on the record, along with the former Governor Kitzhaber and many other legislators, that the short session was to be intended to balance the budget and make some minor adjustments to legislation. And I said, you know, Mr. President, if you try to do this huge legislation in the short session, I said, we're going to push back as hard as we ever have, and we are going to rally the citizens to go back to the ballot and do away with the short session entirely, because you cannot do major policy in 35 days. You can't do it. Halfway through that 35 days, we go into one-hour notice, which eliminates citizen input, because by time something is posted and 1 hour, people don't have time to come from anywhere to come to the Capitol to testify. So the short session was only supposed to be to adjust the budget and to make some changes. Sometimes, believe it or not, sometimes we don't get things right and we have to make some adjustments after it's been implemented.
But yes, it should be, you know, dotting I's and crossing T's. And it hasn't been that way for the last couple of short sessions, to my recollection.
No. That is correct. You know, the state of Washington has a short session, but they put it in their constitution that it was only for balance, to rebalance the budget. And so maybe we need to look at that, since the Democrats have a history now of taking advantage of the short session and blindsiding the citizens with legislation they don't even know about until it winds up on their front doorstep.
I have to say, you know, since we're talking about HB 2020 and climate, I would say the climate might be right to do something like that, because I talked to Democrats and Republicans and non-affiliated voters, and all of them pretty much across the board are really sick of the overreach. So Kim, if something like that did get presented, do you think it would have a chance of passing?
That was going to be my bill. I hadn't even talked to anybody about it. I was going to say, you know, my one bill that I will bring forward, because senators are allowed one bill, will be to end and repeal that short session. We can always call ourselves into session. Yeah. We always have. If ever necessary, we've done it. They're always very limited. We take care of business and we go home. It's not like we have to have a set session in February or any other time to do all this, because it's turning into the long session part B.
Right.
That's what it is.
And almost it seems it's almost on steroids, because there's such a short, the truncated time window that you've got it, and it seems almost more fever pitch to get these things
it
passed. And again, I recall very complex pieces of legislation being pushed in the short session when, like Senator Bartschinger, you said you're on an hour's notice. I work in Salem. I can't get there in an hour.
You know, there's other little detail too. People file for the primary elections. Mm-hmm. It comes right during the end of that time, always. Yeah. So it's always highly political as to what kind of legislation is going to be put forward. It's just built to be political. It just does not. It shouldn't be that way. It's supposed to be just dealing with emergent issues and
administrative
budget.
I would think, sort of administrative functions, balancing the budget
on non-controversial,
but it seems it has morphed into controversy.
Well, you know, I have found out, you know, through observation, that they're the Democrats that have been in that building for years. I mean, you look at Senator Peter Courtney there from Salem, over 35 years. They love it. They love to legislate. Now we have ledge days. That's that's 4 weeks. And even our own legislative director, Dexter Johnson, calls it session creep. It's like we're in session all year round. And we're only a state of 4.2 million people. We do not need a full-time Senate and House. We don't need a full-time legislature.
I don't disagree with that at all. In fact, I agree 100%. So what can we do to make that happen? So, Kim, if you bring a bill, I think it would get a lot of traction.
Right, and it sounds like other people might be bringing that bill. It sounds like
Let's
there's a bunch of us that want to
Let's make a pact.
I'm going to co-sponsor it, Kim.
Awesome.
Excellent. All right, an exclusive right here.
Yep.
I'll third it.
Awesome.
So getting back then, I'm excited by this. I think this is great. I think a lot of people would sign on for that too. But you do talk about, you've got newly engaged people. Kim, you're saying you're still hearing from people. Mm-hmm. The ORP right now has a recall effort going on against the governor. There's a secondary one. One of the challenges, I think, for either political party, both sides, is keeping people actively engaged when it's not right there. Most people don't pay attention to politics.
Most people don't, and guess what? Politics pays attention to them.
Yes. So are you
whether
find...
they're looking or not.
Yeah.
And I think more people are starting to put their heads up and go, what in the heck is going on down there? We need to get engaged. So I'm really happy to see that. At least they've, you know, finally crossed that line where people are starting to wake up.
Well, and I think from the ORP's perspective, I think they heard sort of the groundswell, the clamor from constituents, from voters, do something. We always hear, you know, when there's something happens, we must do something. I think by listening to the constituents and going forth with this recall effort, number one, it gives people a channel for their energy, for their agita, for just being upset with what's going on, and gives them some control that they're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah. I think it's
I'm amazed by what I'm seeing out there on the street. I think the governor has really put herself in a horrible position, because she has overpromised the far left way too much stuff that she can't deliver, so they're mad at her. Then the moderate Democrats, they're mad at her because they've put them in a very, very tough situation. And then the Republicans were mad at them because we're not even invited to the party anymore, you know? So I think the governor has, if there's anybody that has put themselves in a horrible position, it's Governor Kate Brown.
Well, and the people that I'm talking to, like I said, it's across all political spectrums. You're having Democrats trying to sign. There was a funny story about some Democrats going to a Democrat booth at one of the county fairs wanting to sign the recall petition. And it's like, well, no. So, of course, the Republicans were right there to say, come on over here. We have it. And they were able to take care of them. But I think that's one anecdote. But, I mean, there's probably a lot more. And I know that I have talked to Democrats who are, they're just fed up. And, again, it comes back to the arrogance and the overreach and not feeling like you're being heard. People will only tolerate that for so long.
And they wake up, especially when they get their higher bills in their electric and in anything they buy, it's all going to go up with all the stuff that they overreached on in the taxes.
More
people will get engaged, especially when that comes down.
Just the rent control realtor friends I have talked about. I mean, how many people are just selling off their properties? They don't want to deal with it. You just keep the government out of these private contractual relationships.
So, oh, and what they've done in Multnomah County.
Oh, boy.
How would you like to live there?
Oh, no.
Not only you got all the state taxes and mandates and fees going up, look what they're doing to themselves in Portland. Who's going to be able to ever afford to live in Portland?
Nobody, but unfortunately, they're all coming down here to Salem and driving up our prices down here.
Oh, no. Well, that's unfortunate.
I know. We're going to...
Yes.
Oh, I was going to say, we're going to take a quick break and then we can close out.
We could.
We can take a quick break because I kind of want to get both of your opinions on what we have to look forward to 2020 going forward. Some advice you might give to people who are listening as far as, you know, active ways to stay involved, the best way to reach out to you. But we're going to take a quick break before our final segment. Again, we're talking to Senators Bart Shiger and Thatcher, and you're listening to Wednesdays with Denise on Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
And we are back on Newsmakers with Wednesdays with Denise, and I have in studio Senator Kim Thatcher and on the phone Senator Herman Bart Shiger. Senator Bart Shiger, you started the show with the session starting off with rent control that kind of signaled, and the way that was handled, that signaled how things were going to be in the Marble House for Republicans. Recently, the governor was quoted in a Politico article talking about revenge and how it's a dish best served cold and slow. Does that signal to you what 2020 and going forward might look like? Are you there, Senator?
We must have lost him.
Did we lose him?
Oh, yep.
There he is.
I was on mute. I'm sorry.
Ah.
No, I hope not, you know, and as often anymore as I get kind of disgusted with the system and the process and what happens and everything, I always have to fall back to what Winston Churchill once said, that democracy is the worst form of government, except all the rest. So, you know, we have to, our system is a good system when there's balance, and we've got to bring that balance back. I hope the governor was just vetting. If she goes down that road of revenge, again, I'll fall back to a famous quote by General MacArthur, and that is, when seeking revenge, you must first dig two graves. So I hope we don't go down that road. I hope that we try to sort out our differences and come to a compromise and move forward with policies that won't adversely affect Oregonians. It will help Oregonians, because that's what our job is supposed to be, is to better the lives of Oregonians. So I hope not, to answer your question. I hope she was just having a bad hair day.
No, I think it's good to hope for the best, but prepare for the worst.
Yeah, and I think quotes like that are troubling. I know when I read it, too, I was hoping, well, maybe was she being sarcastic? I don't know. It's sort of like social media and texting. There's no tone of voice in it. It was kind of hard to tell. It was a little troubling to me. It was troubling to have the sitting governor. I mean, she represents all Oregonians. She is the governor of the state. So that was a little troubling. And it's like, what does that mean for 2020?
I saw her video on that when she said it.
Well,
It seemed ominous.
Okay, so you look at body language. I had not seen it, so I just read it in print. And then, you know, there's been, you know, the veto pen has come out, and it seems there's been some rural legislation that has been targeted with the veto pen. Are you seeing that as a little bit of payback, Kim?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That seems nakedly obvious to me that it's all about payback.
Yeah. So that, I mean, what do you do going forward? We seem so polarized. Nationally, we're polarized. Locally, we're polarized. But again, I come back to one-on-one within our own spheres of influence. I'm not finding that level of polarization. I have friends who are liberals, friends who are Democrats. We actually agree on more than we disagree on.
That gives me some optimism. I think that's
a true statement. And, you know, with the exception of this last session was just brutal. It was, with all of the human resource problems that we've had in the Capitol and pay equity that we're all struggling with. It was just constant every day. It was something extremely negative. And, you know, unfortunately, the Senate didn't used to be like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, we used to have, social gatherings, both Democrats and Republicans. We didn't have that this time. And I've got a lot of great relationships in the Senate with both R's and D's. Mm-hmm. A lot of D's. I've always said there's not a senator that I can't go to their office and sit down and have a decent conversation. But I will tell you, those relationships were really tested this session. And that's unfortunate. You know, we got to get back to balance. And the only people that can help us get back to balance are Oregonians.
It's the voters. So
right.
Mentioning that, we 2020 is also an election year, and these seats are turning over. Kim, do you have any inclination, might we turn some seats? Might we shift things around, kind of change the players on the playing field a little bit? Because for the short session, we're not. Mm-hmm. We're dealing with the same players. Yeah. But 2020, the election's looking into 2021.
If the same people who have been engaged this whole time mm-hmm. remain engaged, they are still engaged. Mm-hmm. By the time the election rolls around, I do think we could seriously make a great showing, at mm-hmm. least in some of these more competitive districts. And I hope we can change things.
What about the not so competitive districts? It seems like, especially up in the Portland metro area along the I-5 corridor, the big blue dots
right.
in Eugene and Portland, and sadly Salem becoming a little more blue. A lot of these people that are Democrats in there, they run for re-election without any challengers. Is there a mindset of maybe just challenging every, should every race have a challenge?
Well, that's a matter of resources. Yeah. And I think our Senate, our leader on the other end of the phone here uh-huh. would probably have more to say about
okay.
that. But
all right.
It's definitely a resource issue.
Senator Barchigar, what say you about that?
Yeah, there's two things going on is candidate recruitment. Most people don't realize that we are still citizen legislators.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We make about $2,500 a month is all.
Mm-hmm.
And so to try to find people that can afford to serve in the legislature, that is one challenge. And then the other challenge is, we have some races that cost a lot of money. I was just back at a national event in Colorado, and I was talking to some other Senate Republican leaders in different states, and it was kind of comical when I was talking to South Dakota, and I says, well, what's a Senate race cost in South Dakota? And they said, well, somewhere between $7,000 and as high as $12,000. And in Oregon, some of our Senate races are $1 million, $1.5 million.
Wow.
Oh my God. I know we had here in Salem, we had some city council and some school board races. There was a city council race that was $50,000. And these are true volunteer, no pay, zero Zippo.
Right.
Same thing in a Salem Kaiser school board race, zero Zippo. They're volunteer. You're right. That kind of prices a lot of people who would otherwise be willing, able, and very good citizen legislators to just sort of say, nah, no can do.
Exactly. And there's some people that would like to see the Oregon legislature go full-time, like California, and have $100,000 a year paycheck. And I disagree with that.
Yeah.
I keep falling back is, yes, we're a big state, but we're only 4.2 million people. And I think a citizen legislature meeting every other year And maybe on the off years, we used to use the e-board. If you want to come back for a 30-day session just to balance the budget, which does need to happen because projections do change, that would be fine. But I don't think Oregon should ever go to a full-time legislature.
I 100% agree with you on that as well. I just don't think that would... I mean, for me, less government is better government. I'm just real small government in my own personal... It's just, nah, the less you guys meet, the better, I think, for most people. I'm assuming you concur with that, Kim.
Yeah, well, I mean, if a state like Texas can be every other year, yeah. I think we can handle it here in the
yeah.
state.
We forget, 4.2 million... I mean, we're not a big state. We are geographically, of course, but yeah... population-wise, we're not. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm hoping that we see in 2021 coming through the demographics change, you're starting to see, I don't know what the latest numbers are as far as voter registration. I know Marion County, it's becoming a little bit more even. In some areas, it's getting even close where you're seeing a tip. And then, okay, this may be for both of you, what we're really seeing is a growth in the non-affiliated people who are just fed up with both parties. And then we have a closed primary primary in this state. So how do you see those voters getting engaged in candidate selection at the primary level? Senator, I'll throw that one to you quick and then finish with you, Kim, on that.
Yeah, you know, the non-affiliated, the non-affiliateds are, you know, I think those are people that have just had it with both parties. You know, they're had it with the squabbling. I mean, I watch it every night on TV, and it is. It's really disenchanting to, mm-hmm. to listen to some of these things that people are saying, you know. And so this non-affiliated, I think they're just about ready to be the largest group of voters in the state of Oregon. They'll be larger than the Democratic Party.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, Kim, are you seeing that, too, when you're running?
Yeah, but a lot of that reason also is because of the automatic voter registration
right.
at
yeah.
the DMV, mm-hmm. and that's what they automatically get registered as, is non-affiliated. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of why I think you're seeing a lot of that increase.
So I'm seeing it poses a challenge to the party system
yeah,
to engage those voters.
My next question would be how those people get in to vote in the primary.
Well, they can't right now in
exactly.
Oregon because we're closed
how
primary.
How do you get them in there then?
It does kind of change the dynamics a little bit as far as, and then you talk about, I mean, the primary is where we select our candidates. The people are selecting. There's a misinterpretation out there that the parties select the candidates. Actually, the people select the candidates
right.
in the primary system.
Yeah, exactly.
So
we need to get that worked out.
That is going to present a challenge. So I think we're just about out of time because we could go for a lot longer on this.
We could.
I want to thank Senator Herman Bartschiger, SD2, Senate Minority Leader. Thank you so much for taking the time to call in. And Senator Kim Thatcher, thank you so much for coming in. It's been great information to share. We'll love to have you back and fill us in as we get closer to the short session and as things go on. Your insights are both valuable, and we thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Denise.
All right.
So what do you think, Dave? Lots of good information there.
Yeah, and the big problem is to get those independents
yeah.
in either side. They would have to register as a Republican if they want to get involved with that way,
right.
or you know, hold their nose and go Democrat.
Not a fan, I can tell.
I know, but for the longest time, I was registered a Democrat and didn't know it.
Oh.
So there you go.
Yeah.
I finally changed that. And
oh,
now
okay.
I can vote it the way that I want to vote.
That you want to vote.
Yeah.
Republican, right?
Yeah. There you go. Informative. Wednesdays
yeah.
with Denise.
Yes, it's always good. It's always good to be here. Great guest, and I'm glad that both senators were able to join us today.
Absolutely. Thank you. We'll see you next week, and I'll see you tomorrow at the Polk County Fair.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, Wednesdays with Denise Quinn and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.